Verity cleared his throat and looked uncomfortable. "I will speak as plainly as I can, boy, for I see that you know how to hold your tongue when it is wise. Galen was given that place as a plum, not because he merited it. I do not think he has ever fully grasped what it means to be the skill master. Oh, he knows the position carries power, and he has not scrupled to wield it. But Solicity was more than someone who swaggered about secure in a high position. Solicity was advisor to Bounty, and a link between the king and all who skilled for him. She made it her business to seek out and teach as many as manifested real talent and the judgment to use it well. This coterie is the first group Galen has trained since Chivalry and I were boys, and I do not find them well taught. No, they are trained, as monkeys and parrots are taught to mimic men, with no understanding of what they do. But they are what we have." Verity looked out the window and spoke softly. "Galen has no finesse. He is as coarse as his mother was, and just as presumptuous." Verity paused suddenly, and his cheeks flushed as if he had said something ill-considered. He resumed more quietly. "The skill is like a language, boy. I need not shout at you to let you know what I want. I can ask politely, or hint, or let you know my wish with a nod and a smile. I can skill a man and leave him thinking it was all his own idea to please me. But all that eludes Galen, both in the use of the skill and the teaching of it. He uses force to batter his way in. Privation and pain are one way to lower a man's defenses. It is the only way Galen believes in. But Solicity used guile. She would have me watch a kite, or a bit of dust floating in a sunbeam, focusing on it as if there were nothing else in the world. And suddenly there she would be, inside my mind with me, smiling and praising me. She taught me that being open was simply not being closed, and going into another's mind is mostly done by being willing to go outside of your own. You see, boy? Somewhat. I hedged. Somewhat. He sighed. I could teach you to skill, had I but the time. I do not. But tell me this. Were your lessons going well before he tested you? No. I never had any aptitude. Wait, that's not true. What am I saying? What have I been thinking? Though I was sitting, I swayed suddenly, my head bounding off the arm of Verity's chair. He reached out a hand and steadied me. I was too swift, I suppose. Steady now, boy. Someone had misted you, befuddled you, much as I do redship navigators and steersmen, convinced them they've taken a sighting already, and their course is true, when really they are steering into a cross current. Convinced them they've passed a point they haven't sighted yet. Someone convinced you that you could not skill. Galen. I spoke with certainty. I almost knew the moment he had slammed into me that afternoon, and from that time nothing had been the same. I had been living in a fog all those months. Probably. Though if you skilled into him at all, I'm sure you've seen what chivalry did to him. He hated your father with a passion, prior to Shiv turning him into a lapdog. We felt badly about it. We'd have undone it if we could have figured out how to do it and escape Solicity's detection. But Shiv was strong with the skill, and we were all but boys then, and Shiv was angry when he did it over something Galen had done to me, ironically. Even when chivalry was not angry, being skilled by him was like being trampled by a horse, or ducked in a fast-flowing river. More like. He'd get in a hurry and barge into you and dump his information and flee. He paused again and reached to uncover a dish of soup on his tray. I guess I've always assumed you knew all this, though I'm damned if there's any way you could have. Who would have told you? I seized on one piece of information. You could teach me to skill. If I had time, a great deal of time. You're a lot like Shiv and I were when we learned. Erratic, strong, but with no idea how to bring that strength to bear. And Galen has, well, scarred you, I suppose. You've walls I can't begin to penetrate, and I am strong. You'd have to learn to drop them. That's a hard thing. But I could teach you, yes, if you and I had a year and nothing else to do. He pushed the soup aside. But we don't. My hopes crashed again. This second wave of disappointment engulfed me, grinding me against stones of frustration. My memories all recorded themselves, and in a surge of anger, I knew all that had been done to me. Were it not for Smithy, I'd have dashed my life out on the base of the tower that night. Galen had tried to kill me, just as surely as if he'd had a knife. No one would even have known of how he'd beaten me save his loyal coterie. And while he'd failed at that, he had taken from me the chance to learn skilling. He'd crippled me, and I would... I leaped to my feet, furious. Whoa, be slow and careful. You have a grievance, but we cannot have discord within the keep itself right now. Carry it with you until you can settle it quietly. For the king's sake. I bowed my head to the wisdom of his counsel. He lifted the cover of a small roast fowl, dropped it again. Why would you want to learn this skill anyway? It's a miserable thing. No fit occupation for a man. To help you, I said without thinking, and then found it true. Once it would have been to prove myself a true and fit son to chivalry, to impress Burridge or Chade, to increase my standing in the keep. Now, after watching what Verity did day after day with no praise or acknowledgement from his subjects, I found I only wanted to help him. To help me, he repeated. The storm winds were slackening. With exhausted resignation, he lifted his eyes to the window. Take the food away, boy. I've no time for it now. But you need strength, I protested. Guiltily, I knew he had taken time with me that he should have taken for food and sleep. I know. But I have no time. Eating takes energy. Odd to realize that. I have none extra to give to just that now. His eyes were questing afar now, staring through the sheeting rain that was just beginning to slacken. I'd give you my strength, Verity, if I could. He looked at me oddly. Are you sure? Very sure. I could not understand the intensity of his question, but I knew the answer. Of course I would. And more quietly. I am a king's man. And of my own blood, he affirmed. He sighed. For a moment he looked sickened. He looked again at the food, and again out the window. There is just time, he whispered, and it might be enough. Damnation to you, father. Must you always win? Come here then, boy. There was an intensity to his words that frightened me, but I obeyed. When I stood by his chair, he reached out a hand. He placed it on my shoulder, as if he needed assistance to rise. I looked up at him from the floor. There was a pillow under my head, and the blanket I had brought up earlier had been tossed over me. Verity stood, leaning out the window. He was shaking with effort, and the skill he exerted was like battering waves I could almost feel. On to the rocks, he said with deep satisfaction, and whirled from the window. He grinned at me, an old, fierce grin that faded slowly as he looked down on me. Like a calf to the slaughter, he said ruefully. I should have known that you didn't know what you were talking about. What happened to me? I managed to ask. My teeth chattered against each other, and my whole body shook as with a chill. I felt I would rattle my bones out of their joints. You offered me your strength. I took it. He poured a cup of tea, then knelt to hold it to my mouth. Go slowly. I was in a hurry. Did I say earlier that chivalry was a bull with his skill? What must I say about myself, then? He had his old bluff heartiness and good nature back. This was a verity I had not seen for months. I managed a mouthful of the tea and felt the elf bark sting my mouth and throat. My shivering eased. Verity took a casual gulp from the mug. In the old days, he said conversationally, a king would draw on his coterie, half a dozen men or more, and all in tune with one another, able to pool strength and offer it as needed. That was their true purpose, to provide strength to their king or to their own key man. I don't think Galen quite grasps that. His coterie is a thing he has fashioned. They are like horses and bullocks and donkeys, all harnessed together. Not a true coterie at all. They lack the singleness of mind. You drew the strength from me? Yes. Believe me, boy, I would not have, except that I had a sudden need, and I thought you knew what you offered. You yourself named yourself as a king's man. The old term. And as close as we are in blood, I knew I could tap you. He set the mug down on the tray with a thump. Disgust deepened his voice. Shrewd. He sets things in motion, wheels turning, pendulums swaying. It is no accident you are the one to bring me my meals, boy. He was making you available to me. He took a swift turn about the room, then stopped, standing over me. It will not happen again.
It was not so bad,
I said faintly. No? Why don't you try to stand then, or even sit up? You're just one boy, alone, not a coterie. Had I not realized your ignorance and drawn back, I could have killed you. Your heart and breath would just have stopped. I'll not drain you like this, not for anyone. Here. He stooped and, without effort, lifted me and placed me in his chair. Sit here a bit, and eat. I don't need it now, and when you are better, go to Shrewd for me. Say that I say you are a distraction. I wish a kitchen boy to bring my meals from now on.
Verity,
I began. No, he corrected me. Say my prince. For in this, I am your prince, and I will not be questioned on it. Now eat. I bowed my head, miserable, but I did eat. And the elf bark in the tea worked to revive me faster than I had expected. Soon I could stand, to stack the dishes on the tray and then to carry them to the door. I felt defeated. I lifted the latch. Fitz Chivalry Farseer. I halted, frozen by the words. I turned slowly. It's your name, boy. I wrote it myself in the military log, on the day you were brought to me. Another thing I had thought you knew. Stop thinking of yourself as a bastard, Fitz Chivalry Farseer, and be sure that you see Shrewd today.
Goodbye,
I said quietly. But he was already staring out the window again. And so high summer found us all. Chade at his tablets, Verity at his window, Regal courting a princess for his brother, and I quietly killing for my king. The inland and coastal dukes took sides at the council tables, hissing and spitting at one another like cats over fish. And atop it all was Shrewd, keeping each piece of web as taut as any spider and alert to the least thrumming of a line. The red ships struck at us, like ratfish on beef bait, tearing away bits of our folk and forging them. And the forged folk became a torment to the land, beggars or predators, or burden to their families. Folk feared to fish, to trade, or to farm the river-mouth plains by the sea. And yet the taxes must be raised to feed the soldiers and the watchers who seemed unable to defend the land despite their growing numbers. Shrewd had grudgingly released me from my service to Verity. My king had not called me in over a month, when one morning I was abruptly summoned to breakfast.
It's a poor time to wed,
Verity objected. I looked at the sallow, fleshless man who shared the king's breakfast table, and wondered if this was the bluff, hearty prince from my childhood. He had worsened so much in just a month. He toyed with a bit of bread, set it down again. The outdoors had gone from his cheeks and eyes. His hair was dull, his musculature slack. The whites of his eyes were yellowed. Burrich would have wormed him if he'd been a hound. Unasked, I said,
I hunted with Leon 2 days ago. He took a rabbit for me.
Verity turned to me, a ghost of his old smile playing on his face.
You took my wolfhound for rabbits?
He enjoyed it. He misses you, though. He brought me the rabbit, and I praised him, but it didn't seem to satisfy him.
I couldn't tell him how the hound had looked at me. Not for you. As plain in his eyes as in his bearing. Verity picked up his glass. His hand quivered ever so slightly.
I am glad he gets out with you, boy.
It's better than... The wedding, Shrewd cut in, will hearten the people. I am getting old, Verity, and the times are troubled. The people see no end to their troubles, and I do not dare promise them solutions we do not have. The Out-Islanders are right, Verity. We are not the warriors who once settled here. We have become a settled people, and a settled people can be threatened in ways that nomads and rovers have no care for. And we can be destroyed in those same ways. When settled people look for security, they look for continuity. Here I looked up sharply. Those were Chade's words. I'd bet my blood on it. Did that mean that this wedding was something Chade was helping to engineer? My interest became keener, and I wondered again why I had been summoned to this breakfast.
It's a matter of reassuring our folk, Verity. You have not Regal's charm, nor the bearing that let chivalry convince everyone that he could take care of any matter. This is not to slight you. You have as much talent for the skill as I have ever seen in our line, and in many eras, your soldierly skill and tactics would have been more important than chivalry's diplomacy.
This sounded suspiciously like a rehearsed speech to me. I watched Shrewd pause. He put cheese and preserves on some bread and bit into it thoughtfully. Verity sat silent, watching his father. He seemed both attentive and bemused, like a man trying desperately to stay awake and be alert when all he can think of is putting his head down and closing his eyes. Well, Verity certainly looked at least that tired. My brief experiences of the skill and the split concentration it demanded to resist its enticements, while bending it to one's will, made me marvel at Verity's ability to wield it every day. Shrewd glanced from Verity to me and back to his son's face.
Putting it simply, you need to marry. More, you need to beget a child. It would put heart into the people. They would say, well, it cannot be as bad as all that if our prince does not fear to marry and have a child. Surely he would not be doing that if the whole kingdom were on the verge of crumbling.
But you and I would still know better, wouldn't we, father?
There was a hint of rust in Verity's voice, and a bitterness I had never heard there before.
Verity,
Shrewd began, but his son cut in.
My king, he said formally, you and I do know that we are on the brink of disaster, and now, right now, there can be no slackening of our vigilance. I have no time for courting and wooing, and even less time for the more subtle negotiations of finding a royal bride. While the weather is fine, the red ships will raid. And when it turns poor, and the tempests blow their ships back to their own ports, then we must turn our minds and our energies to fortifying our coastlines and training crews to manage raiding ships of our own. That is what I want to discuss with you. Let us build our own fleet, not fat merchant ships to waddle about tempting raiders,
but sleek warships, such as we once had, and our oldest shipwrights still know how to make. And let us take this battle to the Out-Islanders, yes, even through the storms of winter. We used to have such sailors and warriors among us. If we begin to build and train now, by next spring we could at least hold them away from our coast, and possibly by winter we could... It will take money, and money does not flow fastest from terrified men. To raise the funds we need to have our merchants confident enough to continue trading. We have to have farmers unafraid to pasture their flocks on the coast meadows and hills. It all comes back, Verity, to your taking a wife. Verity, so animated when speaking of warships, leaned back in his chair. He seemed to sag in on himself, as if some piece of structure inside him had given way. I almost expected to see him collapse.
"As you will, my king," he said.
But as he spoke, he shook his head, denying the affirmation of his own words.
"I will do as you see wise. Such is the duty of a prince to his king and to his kingdom. But as a man, father, it is a bitter and empty thing, this taking of a woman selected by my younger brother. I will wager that having looked on Regal first, when she stands beside me, she will not see me as any great prize."
Verity looked down at his hands, at the battle and work scars that now showed plainly against their paleness. I heard his name in his words when he said softly,
"Always I have been your second son, behind chivalry with his beauty, strength, and wisdom, and now behind Regal, with his cleverness and charm and airs. I know you think he would be a better king to follow after you than I. I do not always disagree with you. I was born second, and raised to be second. I had always believed my place would be behind the throne, not upon it, and when I thought that chivalry would follow you to that high seat, I did not mind it. He gave me great worth, my brother did. His confidence in me was like an honor. It made me a part of all he accomplished. To be the right hand of such a king were better than to be king of many a lesser land. I believed in him as he believed in me. But he is gone, and I tell you nothing surprising when I say to you that there is no such bond between Regal and me. Perhaps there are too many years. Perhaps chivalry and I were so close we left no room for a third, but I do not think he sought for a woman that can love me. Or one that—"
"He chose you a queen!"
Shrewd interrupted harshly. I knew that this was not the first time this had been argued, and sensed that Shrewd was most annoyed that I had been privy to these words.
"Regal chose a woman, not for you, or himself, or any such silliness. He chose a woman to be queen of this country, of these six duchies. A woman who can bring to us the wealth, and the men, and the trade agreements that we need now, if we are to survive these red ships. Soft hands and a sweet scent will not build your warships, Verity. You must set aside this jealousy of your brother. You cannot fend off the enemy if you do not have confidence in those who stand behind you."
"Exactly,"
Verity said quietly. He pushed his chair back.
"Where do you go?" Shrewd demanded irritably.
"To my duties,"
Verity said shortly.
"Where else have I to go?"
For a moment, even Shrewd looked taken aback.
"But you've scarcely eaten,"
he faltered.
"The skill kills all other appetites. You know that."
"Yes."
Shrewd paused.
"And I know too, as you do, that when this happens a man is close to the edge. The appetite for the skill is one that devours a man, not one that nourishes him."
They both seemed to have forgotten entirely about me. I made myself small and unobtrusive, nibbling on my biscuit as if I were a mouse in a corner.
"But what does the devouring of one man matter if it saves a kingdom?"
Verity did not bother to disguise the bitterness in his voice, and to me it was plain that it was not the skill alone that he spoke of. He pushed his plate away. "After all," he added with ponderous sarcasm, "it is not as if you do not have yet another son to step in and wear your crown. One unscarred by what the skill does to men, one free to wed where he will or will not."
"It is not Regal's fault that he is unskilled. He was a sickly child, too sickly for Galen to train, and who could have foreseen that two skilled princes would not be enough?"
Shrewd protested. He rose abruptly and paced the length of the chamber. He stood, leaning on the windowsill and peering out over the sea below.
"I do what I can, son,"
he added in a lower voice.
"You think I do not care, that I do not see how you are being consumed?"
Verity sighed heavily.
"No, I know. It is the weariness of the skill that speaks so, not I. One of us, at least, must keep a clear head and try to grasp the whole of what is happening. For me, there is nothing but the sensing out, and then the sorting, the trying to fix Navigator out from oarsmen, to scent out the secret fears that the skill can magnify, to find the faint hearts in the crew and prey upon those first. When I sleep, I dream them, and when I try to eat, they are what sticks in my throat. You know I have never relished this, father. It never seemed to me worthy of a warrior, to skulk and spy about in men's minds. Give me a sword, and I'll willingly explore their guts. I'd rather unman a man with a blade than turn the hounds of his own mind to nipping at his heels."
"I know. I know," Shrewd said gently.
But I did not think he really did. I, at least, did understand Verity's distaste for his task. I had to admit I shared it, and felt him somehow dirtied by it. And when he glanced at me, my face and eyes were empty of any judgment. Deeper within me was the sneaking guilt that I had failed to learn the skill, and was no use to my uncle at this time. I wondered if he looked at me and thought of drawing on my strength again. It was a frightening thought, but I steeled myself to the request. But he only smiled at me kindly, if absently, as if no such thought had ever crossed his mind. And as he rose and walked past my chair, he tousled my hair as if I were Leon.
"Take my dog out for me, even if it is only for rabbits. I hate to leave him in my rooms each day, but his poor dumb pleading was a distraction from what I must do."
I nodded, surprised at what I felt emanating from him, a shadow of the same pain I had felt at being separated from my own dogs.
"Verity."
He turned at Shrewd's call.
"Almost I forgot to tell you why I had called you here. It is, of course, the Mountain Princess, Ketkin, I think her name was."
"Ketrikin. I at least remember that much. A skinny little child the last time I saw her."
"So she is the one you have selected?"
"Yes.
For all the reasons we have already discussed, and a day has been set, 10 days before our harvest feast. You will have to leave here during the first part of reap time in order to reach there in time. There will be a ceremony there before her own people, binding the two of you and sealing all the agreements, and a formal wedding later when you arrive back here with her. Regal sends word that you must—" Verity had halted, and his face darkened with frustration.
"I cannot. You know I cannot. If I leave off my work here, while it is still reap time, there will be nothing to bring a bride back to. Always the Out-Islanders have been greediest and most reckless in the final month before the winter storms drive them back to their own wretched shore.
Do you think it will be any different this year? Like as not, I would bring Ketrikin back here to find them feasting in our own buck keep, with your head on a pike to greet me." King Shrewd looked angered, but kept his temper as he asked,
"Do you really think they could press us that greatly if you gave off your efforts for 20 days or so?"
"I know it,"
Verity said wearily. I know it as surely as I know that I should be at my post right now, not arguing here with you. Father, tell them it must be put off. I'll go for her as soon as we've a good coat of snow on the ground, and a blessed gale lashing all ships into their ports.
It cannot be, Shrewd said regretfully. They have beliefs of their own up in the mountains. A wedding made in winter yields a barren harvest. You must take her in the fall when the lands are yielding, or in late spring when they till their little mountain fields.
I cannot. By the time spring comes to their mountains, it is fair weather here, with raiders on our door sills. Surely they must understand that.
Verity moved his head about like a restless horse on a short lead. He did not want to be here. Distasteful as he found his skill work, it called to him. He wanted to go to it, wanted it in a way that had nothing to do with protecting his kingdom. I wondered if Shrewd knew that. I wondered if Verity did.
To understand something is one thing, the king expounded. To insist they flaunt their traditions is another. Verity, this must be so. Done now.
Shrewd rubbed his head as if it pained him.
We need this joining. We need her soldiers. We need her marriage gifts. We need her father at our back. It cannot wait.
Could not you perhaps go in a closed litter, unhampered by managing a horse, and continue your skill work as you travel? It might even do you good to get out and about a bit, to have a little fresh air and...
No!
Verity bellowed the word. And Shrewd turned where he stood, almost as if he were at bay against the window sill. Verity advanced to the table and pounded on it, showing a temper I had never suspected in him.
No and no and no! I cannot do the work I must do to keep the raiders from our coast while being rocked and jolted in a horse litter. And no, I will not go to this bride you have chosen for me, to this woman I scarce recall in a litter, like an invalid or a witling. I will not have her see me so, nor would I have my men sniggering behind me saying, oh, this is what brave Verity has come to, riding like a palsied old man, pandered off to some woman as if he were an out-islander whore. Where are your wits that you can think such stupid plans? You've been among the mountain folk. You know their ways. Think you a woman of theirs would accept a man who came to her in such a sickly way? Even their royals expose a child if it is born less than whole. You'd spoil your own plan and leave the 6 duchies to the raiders while you did it. Then perhaps there is a red ship right now, not so far that they cannot see Egg Island, and already the captain of it is discounting the dream of ill omen he had last night, and the navigator is correcting his course, wondering how he could have so mistaken the landmarks of our coastline. Already the work I did last night while you slept and Regal danced and drank with his courtiers is coming undone, while we stand here and yatter at one another. Father, arrange it. Arrange it any way you wish and can, so long as it does not involve me doing anything save the skill, while fair weather plagues our coast.
Verity had been moving as he spoke, and the slamming of the king's chamber door almost drowned out his final words. Shrewd stood and stared at the door for some moments. Then he passed a hand across his eyes, rubbing them. But for weariness, or tears, or just a bit of dust, I could not tell. He looked about the room, frowning when his eyes encountered me, as if I were a thing puzzlingly out of place. Then, as if recalling why I were there, he observed dryly,
"Well, that went well, didn't it? Still and all, a way must be found. And when Verity rides to claim his bride, you will go with him."
If you wish, my king, I said quietly.
I do.
He cleared his throat, then turned to look out his window again.
The princess has a single sibling, an older brother. He is not a healthy man. Oh, he was well and strong once,
But on the ice fields he took an arrow through his chest, passed clean through him, so Regal was told, and the wounds on his chest and back healed. But in winters he coughs blood, and in summer he cannot sit a horse nor drill his men for more than half the morning. Knowing the mountain folk, it is full surprising that he is their king in waiting. I thought quietly for a moment. Among the mountain folk the custom is the same as ours. Male or female, the offspring inherit by the order of their birth.
Yes. That is so,
Shrewd said quietly, and I knew that already he was thinking that 7 duchies might be stronger than 6. And Princess Ketrickin's father? I asked. How is his health?
As hale and hearty as one could wish for a man of his years. I am sure he will reign long and well for at least another decade, keeping his kingdom whole and safe for his heir.
Probably by then our troubles with the red ships will be long over. Verity will be free to turn his mind to other things.
Probably.
King Shrewd agreed quietly. His eyes finally met mine.
When Verity goes to claim his bride, you will go with him,
he said again. You understand what your duties will be?
I trust to your discretion.
I inclined my head to him. As you wish, my king.